through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
ESPN's Bill Barnwell has an article up on ESPN.com talking about Andy Reid's masterpiece and how the Chiefs came back and the 49ers blew it. He looks at the differences between both franchise quarterbacks. I think you can comfortably say Garoppolo is a franchise quarterback of the 49ers.
They're paying him like one.
I think there are conspiracy theories of like, will he go away? But I don't think so. He also talks about how where Shanahan went wrong and the battle between the two coaches. So let's get him on right now to talk about that game. Bill, you there?
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, Bill. Thanks for joining us. So I'm going to get things started first. Where did Shanahan go wrong, and where does he not deserve as much blame?
Okay, so he's getting a lot of criticism for his decision not to run the football in the fourth quarter. I don't think that's fair. First drive of the fourth quarter, they're in second and nine, third and 14. They even scrambled on third and 14, so can't fault them there. That's what, those are throwing situations regardless of the lead or not a lead. Second drive. The third drive, I should say, they were trailing. It's after the two-minute warning. You got to throw there. Everyone throws after the two-minute warning if they're trailing. Now, that middle drive, maybe some questions, but second and five, third and five, he had George Kittle wide open. First time Chris Jones knocked down the football. Second time Jimmy Garoppolo threw a different direction. So I think Shanahan did a pretty good job there. But I do think managing the game on the whole, very conservative decision-making at the end of the first half, first drive of the third quarter, you have to score points. You can't just, you know, be happy to settle for 10-10. I think about that Seahawks-Packers championship game as a good example of that, where you figure, okay, well, we're in great shape right now, but if the other team gets hot, you're going to want to bank as many points as possible preparing for that moment. So I do think that Kyle Shanahan was too conservative and cost himself an opportunity to have a chance to win the game late in the fourth quarter.
Bill, why do you think Kyle Shanahan was so conservative in those moments? Because we've seen Kyle Shanahan direct his offense and really do a great job managing games throughout the year. Yeah. But in this Super Bowl in particular, what do you think was holding him back and playing more of a conservative, you know, game management from a game management standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more about limiting the opportunities Patrick Mahomes had, maybe. But this is a thing he's done in the past, even in the championship game. He was pretty conservative with some close decision when they were running the ball incredibly effectively. So, you know, I think it's just he has to run the team based on the skills of the players they have, and they have a great running game. So I think he's maybe not realizing how talented that offense is or not having enough faith in it, and maybe just sort of focusing on the worst-case scenario as opposed to the most likely scenario in certain situations. But, I mean, the other fair thing to ask about, and I don't know if this is true or not, but it seems like Jimmy Garoppolo might be a concern in terms of, you know, maybe he didn't trust Jimmy Garoppolo to lead a drive there at the end of the first half, which is a shame because Jimmy Garoppolo, until the fourth quarter, played really well in this football game.
He did. It really was. I mean, you even look at just their stats through three quarters, you could have taken out the names and I would have told you Jimmy Garoppolo was Patrick Mahomes. It was just not his greatest game. You wrote, this is just savage, Bill. Anyone who isn't directly related to Garoppolo would take Mahomes to complete one deep pass with the game on the line over his rival from San Francisco. Yikes. But I agree. I think the most part, he kind of played well. Were there questions that he did answer Jimmy Garoppolo in that game, or does everything kind of remain up in the air with him in San Francisco?
I think it's still kind of where it was. You know, I mean, obviously, he didn't crumble after the interception, that first one. He played really well after that first pick. He made a bunch of really nice throws, including that one to George Kittle that was called back for offensive pass interference. But he played overall pretty well. I mean, some decisions obviously late that were questionable. And then I think maybe just sort of, you know, pressed a little bit on that final drive, missed that possible game-winning touchdown by a couple steps. But I thought overall, I mean, he was fine. I don't think he was, you know, it wasn't like he was dragging them down. Could he have done more? Of course. But I think he was, you know, he was one throw away, maybe a couple completions away from winning that game. And I think if they had won the game, he might have even won MVP.
Bill, I'm so happy to say this statement, ask you this question. Andy Reid has come into this Super Bowl, one, basically the narrative around him was, one, that he couldn't win the big one. He couldn't win a Super Bowl. And two, that he struggled mightily in his career with game management. And yet, in this article you wrote, you talked about Andy Reid's masterpiece and how he outcoached the 49ers and Shanahan. Explain to us exactly what you meant by that, and what did he do that was so great?
Yeah, I mean, you think about that first half drive, right, where they were facing a 4th-and-1, and there's an injury timeout. Andy Reid sends out his field goal unit during the break, during the intermission, while it's in commercial. And I just see everyone I know who's at the game on Twitter just typing, "Oh no, Andy, don't do it. What a mistake." And then he sends his offense back out. And they want to play from 1949. They stole from the 1949 Rose Bowl, according to Eric Bieniemy. 4 first downs, score a touchdown 2 plays later. I mean, it's just, you have to put faith in your team. You have to put faith in what you do well. With the Chiefs, I'm not sure they should ever punt. I mean, that offense is so scary. I think I would just take my chances with an extra down with Patrick Mahomes and company. I thought they were, you know, he took, when his offense was struggling for most of this game, they took advantage of the opportunity they had to score a touchdown. Then in the fourth quarter, once the pass rush did slow down, you saw what they did, 21 consecutive points. The first time, I believe, I think it's tied for the Super Bowl record for most points in the fourth quarter. And they did it in half a quarter. That's how good they were on offense once the pass rush slowed down.
Okay, last question about the Super Bowl. And then I'd love to hear some of your opinion on the Seahawks, the kind of path that they could take there. I think just looking at that philosophy of, you know, maybe a conservative approach versus analytics Andy, as you titled him in here. So I'd love to get into some of that Russell Wilson talk. But first, I just have to ask one last question. I know where I stand on this, but was it fair for Patrick Mahomes to get MVP?
It wasn't unfair, but I think I would have preferred other people. I think Chris Jones was the best player the Chiefs had in that game, so I would have picked him. But, at the end of the day, I mean, it's not as bad as when Eli won MVP in 2007 when the Giants defense stopped the 16-0 Patriots, and David Tyree made one of the greatest catches, you know, in football history. Eli was probably the 27th best player on the field. You know, Patrick Mahomes was one of the best players on the field, especially in that fourth quarter. So I don't think I would have picked him, but I can't really fault them too much.
Bill, I look at this game and watch the two different quarterbacks. I watch Jimmy Garoppolo. I watch Patrick Mahomes. There is a clear difference to me in a Jimmy Garoppolo who, again, is facing a lot of tough criticism. But the reality is he is not a clear-cut franchise quarterback like Patrick Mahomes is. And I flip that to here in Seattle, and here we have Russell Wilson. In your mind, is Russell Wilson the same caliber of player as Patrick Mahomes? And with that being said, what does Seattle need to do to give Russell the best chance to lead them to a Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think Russell Wilson is every bit as good as Patrick Mahomes. I think he's better in some ways, not maybe quite as good in some ways, but I think he is one of the 3 or 4 best quarterbacks in football and have for a long time now. I think there is this perception by the coaching staff, by the organization, that what they do with the running game helps Russell Wilson succeed. Every bit of evidence we have now over 6 or 7 years says it's Russell Wilson propping up the running game, not the other way around. I think, you know, they don't have to turn into the Chiefs. They don't have to throw the ball 65% of the time or anything, but they can't wait until the fourth quarter and have Russell win games in the fourth quarter. They have to be more aggressive throwing the football early in games, early on downs. You can't just get to 3rd and 8 and 3rd and 9 and expect Russell to make magic happen. It's unfair. It's just not a sustainable way to win. And I think that, you know, Russell was so talented. He's done so much. You have an MVP candidate. Use him. It's just that simple. Like, Chris Carson couldn't stop fumbling this year. Rashad Penny got hurt, and they were running Marshawn Lynch out during the playoffs, and he was not honestly able to run very much. And they were still giving him the ball and still forcing Russell to try and win games in the second half. It was, you know, if I was a Seahawks fan, that would be infuriating to me. So I, they don't have to become the greatest show on turf Rams. They don't have to be the 2019 Chiefs, but I think you have to throw the ball more frequently, even just to see. You know, if you do it for 5 weeks and it's wrong, go back to the running game. Say, hey, we gave it a shot. But I think you have to see, hey, what's our offensive upside with Russell Wilson being the focus of our offense on 1st and 2nd down, not just on 3rd down?
Bill, I want to ask you what you mean by this, because I think this is a really interesting statement that you made. And in terms of what the evidence or the data shows in the last 6 or 7 years, what do you mean by Russell's propping up the run game? Because I do agree with you that that is the thought, that's the philosophy overall, is that they're helping Russell Wilson. But you're saying actually, no, Russell is propping this run game and helping it be as good as it is. So what exactly does that mean?
Yeah, when you look at the data historically, you know, at least the research that I've seen, typically running quarterbacks help rushing offenses, whether it's just keeping a defensive end at home and creating a running lane, whether it's the threat of the read option, the threat of scrambling, you know, maybe a running back or defensive end, getting tired, chasing down a quarterback like Russell Wilson when they scramble and maybe not having the legs to hold up against the block or chase down a running back on the next play. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to think Russell Wilson is making it easier for the Seahawks to run the football. So, you know, I think he certainly has the ability himself to run. I think that helps as well. But I just, you know, when you look at this offense, look at the context of similar teams around the league and look at what similar quarterbacks do to their own running games, they tend to help. So I'm inclined to think the same thing is true for Russell Wilson in Seattle.
What's your confidence level that that's something that starts to change, where you start to see him pass more in the first half, you just start to see him become a focal point of the offense rather than a balancing act against the run game? Do you think that that doesn't change at all, or do you think that's something that you feel has slowly been evolving over time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it hasn't changed yet. That's the frustrating thing, I think, is that, you know, Russell's been so good for so long that you figure it would have happened by now. It does, I will say, it does seem like he is publicly complaining more, maybe agitating more to throw the ball more frequently than he ever has before. And will that mean something, you know, when it comes to September? Who knows? I don't think it's realistic to say, but I mean, Pete Carroll doesn't have that many more chances to win a Super Bowl. Like, he's, you know, one of the oldest coaches in football. And Russell Wilson is in the prime of his career. We're not going to get to see this again. You know, Russell Wilson's not going to be the same guy at 36 or 37. He could still be a good quarterback, and the next quarterback might be good too, but this is a guy who was probably the second or third best player in football this year. I mean, you just getting that sort of season out of a quarterback is rare, and I would hope that they would see that and say, hey, let's give it a chance, even if it's for a few weeks, but you know, they haven't had it happen yet, so I'm certainly skeptical they're going to go to it when it comes to the 2020 season.
I want to stay on this path because I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this question, but I'd be really curious to know whether you think the bigger obstacle keeping Seattle from another Super Bowl run is that philosophy, or if it's just personnel on defense. Because they've also taken a step back, you know, maybe with offensive line and pass protection. Obviously, their pass rush, they have holes to fill there. I think when we look at it, it's a debate of, okay, if they fill those and they get starting quality players and they get Pro Bowlers and they get all those pieces, does that same philosophy work, or is the bigger issue scheme and philosophy?
I think it's the scheme, you know, because I think we saw when they had those pieces on defense this year, which not everyone, but when they had Jadeveon Clowney playing healthy and playing effectively, when they had Quandre Diggs playing well at safety, they were able to win games. And they still needed to get that next level with the offense, but you know, they came within a possession, realistically, of stopping Seattle. Maybe if that there's not that drop in the fourth quarter, maybe things go out differently. Who knows? But I think it depends. Like, I think it depends. If they don't add anybody on defense and they lose Clowney, then I think it'll be the defense. But I think if they add some significant pass rusher to this defense, and the secondary does improve with another year under Pete Carroll. It's obviously a young secondary in a lot of places, and you get a full season out of Quandre Diggs, then I think it would be the scheme. I think that the scheme would be the biggest thing holding them back on offense, because I think they're just, it's antiquated. You know, it's a scheme that's built around a 1980s offense, and the Seahawks can be very possibly a 2019 offense.
And that's Bill Barnwell. You can read his stuff on ESPN. Follow him at Bill Barnwell on Twitter. Thank you, Bill.
Bill, that was awesome. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
All right, let's get to some NFL headlines.
We will get to some NFL headlines. There we go.
Got it. You're a champ, Curtis.
Thanks,
Stacey. A champ. I'm telling you, man, post-Miami Curtis. We already have problems.
Yeah, I came in here wearing sunglasses today.
You came in here.
Don't talk to
too
me
confident.
I've had my
coffee. It's fine. Greg Olsen will visit with the Seahawks. That's according to multiple sources. I'm interested in this. I don't think that he would be signed to a pricey deal as a 35-year-old tight end. I think that it gives you some depth, but it obviously would be a short-term solution. It's not a guy you're drafting.
True.
It's not a young guy you're signing in free agency or trading for. So it's just, once again, just kind of a cheap option.
It is a cheap option, but to me, look, the comparison that Kyle Brown made to Ziggy Ansah and Luke Jokel, this is not even close to that comparison. I think Greg Olsen, Kyle, is a much better upgrade in terms of the situation for the tight end room than going and acquiring some guy in the third wave of free agency. Greg Olsen can still provide for a team, but he is, like you said, a short-term solution. And there are other guys out there in this free agency class for the tight ends that I think are worth looking at. You've got Austin Hooper, I think will probably get overpaid, so probably not real in terms of option for Seattle. The two other guys that intrigue me are Eric Ebron and Hunter Henry. Mm-hmm. Hunter Henry is another guy who's had injury history, but he's significantly younger than Greg Olsen. So there are some guys out there that will be intriguing, and this just goes to, you know, that conversation. Do you spend free agency money on a guy like Greg Olsen to bring in veteran presence and a guy you feel confident is going to provide right away, or do you maybe look into the draft? I don't know, but the tight end position needs to be addressed. I feel good about it as long as it's a frontline talented player, like an Irv Smith Jr. type, a Jonnu Smith type for Tennessee, a guy like O.J. Howard in Tampa Bay. Those types of talents I think would be worth investing in the draft, but it can't be some fifth, sixth round tight end.
The Seahawks ranked number 7 in NFL Network's postseason power rankings. Number 1 is Kansas City, 2 is San Francisco, 3 Baltimore, 4 New Orleans, 5 Green Bay, and 6 Tennessee. I'm okay with this ranking. I think it's fair. I think you look at the rest of these teams, they're all teams with better records who got further in the playoffs.
I agree. I agree with that. And I think the Seahawks, because of Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner, give you the chance and the ability to be at 7 at this point in time. But like I said earlier, that there is a situation here for the Seahawks. They have to make the right decisions in free agency with the draft to get themselves into this upper echelon of the NFL, because you've got some major holes on that defensive line. You've got some major, major question marks about your offensive line. And as Brock Heward sat in here at 1 o'clock and said, they have to gain more team speed. And in general, fully agree with that assessment. And the Seahawks have a healthy cap situation. They have a healthy draft situation to be able to get it done.
The Jacksonville Jaguars will play 2 home games in London in 2020. And you cannot convince me that my conspiracy theory is wrong, that this team is slowly moving to London.
You think the Jacksonville Jaguars are going
to
London.
Kyle Brown's theory. Big Kyle says every year they're just going to add one
next
more
year
game.
They play 3. They're like, hey, we're still the Jacksonville Jaguars.
We're not going anywhere. We're just going to have 3 games.
And they play 4 and they're like, do we play half our home games in Jacksonville or not?
The Khan family, right? They have ties to London, right?
London.
So this conspiracy is not
own Wembley Stadium where these games will be played.
It's not too far out there here, people. So it's interesting. And look, I don't know if that would be the right decision for the NFL, but I'd be intrigued by it.
Now that Meghan Markle isn't there, I just have no interest in going to London. The Falcons will not offer a new contract to Vic Beasley. The weirdest part about this story, though, is that they announced it via an all-caps breaking news tweet from their own Twitter account, which, I don't know, I don't think I've ever seen that before. Anyone? Am I wrong here?
No, I haven't really seen this before either. I guess I think they're doing Vic Beasley a solid here by making it very clear to everyone around the NFL that they're having to move on. And if you look at a bunch of these teams, which we will, and our own boy Howdy did a ton of research on this very topic, but teams that have some serious issues in terms of their cap space, the Atlanta Falcons are a team that have major difficulties because of Matt Ryan, Julio Jones. They've got a ton of guys that are huge cap hits, and they would love to sign back Austin Hooper. They would love to bring back Vic Beasley, but they simply can't do it. They just are in not a position, cap space-wise, to even engage in these conversations.
This is a question maybe too big for right now, but what's the biggest name you think the Seahawks could feasibly look for in free agency? Is it going to be Clowney? Is that the biggest name that they could? Because that's going to be a big name. He might be the number 3-4 guy out there.
Right. So with that being said, I think he is the biggest name that you can go out and get. And then after that, it's about the next tier. So Clowney is in that elite category.
He's going to get a big deal.
But then who can you find in that $8 to $12 million range in terms of your pass rusher that you can add that's going to make a big difference? And I think there's a bunch of guys out there, thankfully, that can really fit that mold. So it's going to be really interesting. I do believe that they need to make three really good additions on that defensive line for people to feel comfortable in terms of their pass rush. And to see how they get it done is going to be fun to watch.
Let's see what's on tap.
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
You've got the Hot Stove League show tonight with Shannon Dreher. Is that at 7 or 7:30? 7:10 ESPN
7
Seattle.
7 to 9.
7
PM.
to 9.
Do we know of any guests that are coming on?
I haven't gotten
Shannon's
official
the
word.
Biggest name.
Okay.
But Shannon will be there.
Shannon Dreher.
And plenty of Marco Gonzalez talk. I'm sure.
Lots of Marco Gonzalez talk. I actually am especially looking forward to, I always love Shannon's insight, but she knows so much about the prospects. And I think this is one of those years where you're going to want to know as much as you can about guys that you haven't seen before.
There's no question about that. And gathering all and any information, I think, is going to be great, because I also think it's going to make your Mariner watching experience is not going to be necessarily fun in terms of the win-loss column this year. That has been made very clear by the organization. But what can bring your enjoyment level up is really understanding prospects, understanding who are the guys that are going to be playing on this roster that have a legit chance to be a part of this thing in the future, and also kind of figuring out where the time frame is going to be with these guys like a Kelenic and maybe a Julio Rodriguez. Do they see some action here at some point during the year for the Mariners? I think there's some very interesting things to keep an eye out for that can make this baseball season as a Mariners fan enjoyable.
Again, that's going to be from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. tonight on 710 ESPN Seattle. So come for Bob, Dave, and Moore. Stick around for the Hot Stove League. And if you miss it, if you have to work or for some reason prioritize your life over us, I don't know why you would, but if you have to, you can check out their podcast at 710sports.com afterward. Coming up next, the Seahawks can take advantage of the 49ers Super Bowl hangover.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Jake, during the break, me and Curtis were holding our respective footballs. Mine's child size, but it's cool because it makes my hands look big and it makes me look like I have a lot of ball control. And I'm just here spinning it, looking cool. But we were hanging out. We were talking shop.
Yeah, just throwing the old pigskin back and forth as we do.
Hanging out.
Uh-huh.
And one thing I asked you that then we came back from break, so you didn't get a chance to answer, was the hardest you've ever been hit on a football field in your life.
Actually, it's a pretty easy one because I remember it vividly and still remember the impact. It was my freshman year, third game. We're playing at Florida State as well as with BYU. We're going to at Florida State, and this was my first, real experience of going down there and into an environment like that. And I dropped back. It was really a three-step drop concept. So should be able to get the ball out of my hands and not get hit. And I had Nigel Bradham, who is now the middle linebacker for the Philadelphia Eagles. He came in free right off of a blitz. I throw the ball, and as I'm throwing the ball, I get just absolutely rocked right in the chin. Probably is a flag today and the way they call things. But
back in your day.
But really, I felt my body, like my ligaments and everything, just kind of like go out of socket and come back in. And it was not fun. It was not a fun hit. That was one of those where you take a second to gather yourself and make sure you're still, your body's still intact, and then you try and get up and act like nothing happened, and it's hard to do.
I mean, I lost my goggles.
Absolutely rocked.
I lost my goggles once during a race, so we have very similar athletic experiences and things we've had to overcome.
Well, that's pretty bad, though.
That's like, worse, I think.
That's worse because were your eyes open when you lost them? Were like the chlorine just went right into your eyes?
I could have lost my sight.
Well, I'm glad we didn't get to that point, Stacey.
Yeah,
well, glad you were able to survive that.
Thank you. You too, Jake. Today we've been talking about, I think, one of the biggest Seahawks-related stories might just be the interest in tight end Greg Olsen, whether or not you'd want that veteran help here. We've also been talking about the Super Bowl hangover the 49ers could have. The Rams certainly did last season. It's very common. And whether or not the Seahawks could benefit from that. Capitalizing on or overarching all of this is a conversation about where the Seahawks should spend their assets. If an advantage the Seahawks have over the rest of the NFC West is their cap space and maybe their draft capital, well, where do they spend it? What do you do to get back to the Super Bowl? We've had Bill Barnwell on to talk about whether or not it's personnel or scheme. He also recapped the Super Bowl, some of his coaching and player takeaways. We've had Brock on to talk about offense versus defense, where you invest. We've had Mike on to talk about a hypothetical alternate reality where the Seahawks were very close to drafting Patrick Mahomes, what that would have been like for both players. All of that you can listen back to 710sports.com on our podcast page. But for now, I want to revisit some of these because we covered some pretty interesting topics. The first is that I think you and I still disagree on where the Seahawks should spend their money, but we both agree that the Seahawks are in a better predicament than we give them credit for.
For sure. In the sense that you look at the division right now in the NFC West and the 49ers, I mean, a legit outlook is that the Super Bowl hangover for teams that lose are real, and it is a very hard thing to come by. And when Brock Heward was on, he talked about, you know, the differences in which he learned from Dave Wyman about the credit pie when you win and the blame pie when you lose. And that's something that the 49ers are going to have to work through internally as players, as coaches, and are they able to overcome that? That's something that's very, very hard to do. The other side of it is the Rams right now, although they are a talented team, they have a sexual offense that Tom Wassel likes to say that he very much enjoys.
Tom's very attracted to the Rams offense.
Yes, and but they are in a very bad position in terms of cap space and in terms of draft capital. So they are not in a healthy position to continue to build and continue to sustain a winning, in my opinion. You look at the Seahawks. They've got an elite quarterback in Russell Wilson who is able to have the potential to win any game they're in, just like Patrick Mahomes. Bad game throughout the first three quarters and still able to win the game in the final 6 minutes. Russell Wilson has that same level of ability. Pete Carroll, John Schneider, they've been there before. They know how to get it done. And they are in the best situation they've been in quite some time in terms of cap space and draft capital and being able to acquire frontline superstar talent. So you look at it, and I just think there's a ton of reason for optimism when you look into 2020 and 2021 as compared to how they match up with in the 49ers and the Rams.
Yeah, when we were talking about kind of what goes into a Super Bowl hangover, I think it was interesting to hear Brock's point because it was really about what kind of challenges does any team deal with in their offseason, right? The Seahawks are coming off a season where they improved in their overall record. They went further in the playoffs than they had the year before, but there were plenty of questions they had leaving, and they had a disappointing end to their season with their loss in a game that they could have and maybe should have won. And now you have a bit longer to stew on those answers or to stew on those questions,
correct,
right? You aren't coming back immediately. You're afforded more time in your off season. So on the one hand, it makes kind of the long tenures of certain coaches like Carroll all the more impressive because you think, man, you've had to through so many of those off seasons. Secondly, though, it leaves up an interesting conversation for an extended period of time about what they need to do to get back there. And I think that you and I would both agree that they need to make some big changes. And one thing that Bill Barnwell said was interesting to me because I don't know that I agreed with it before, and now I wonder. And that's that he felt that the scheme and philosophy the Seahawks have was more of a hindrance to them than the personnel they lacked.
And that is interesting from the standpoint of I look at it and I say that I don't disagree with that because I think that Russell can take on that workload.
Yeah.
But also when you look at the scheme that they do have and what they were able to create, going into a pass, you know, oriented offense with Russell Wilson and having the 30th best offensive line in terms of pass win rate is not a great recipe, right? So you have to fit personnel and make changes at personnel to be able to fit some of that philosophy. The Kansas City Chiefs are not able to run the system just based off of Patrick Mahomes. I mean, look at Patrick Mahomes and who he went to in the second drive against Richard Sherman. He went to Sammy Watkins for a 38-yard gain on a go route. Sammy Watkins, you hear that name, you know that name, and you know the talent that he has. What is he in terms of priority target for the Kansas City Chiefs? What does he fall? Is he
third, fourth?
He's the fourth target for them. He's number four. Mm-hmm. And Russell and Patrick Mahomes in that moment looked at him in press man coverage against Richard Sherman, one of the best corners, and said, I like my matchup. That's how much talent that they have around him. They have great offensive line protection around him. So when you're talking about scheme, personnel does matter. And do you have it? Do you have all that matched together? So that's something that if the Seahawks want to change their philosophy a little bit for Russell Wilson, then it has to be matched in terms of personnel as well.
Some differing opinions on our text line. The 206 says, Russell has more weapons than 95% of the NFL. It's now or never. 253 says, I feel like the Seahawks need players with some more swag. We're going to talk about some interesting comments Russell Wilson had when we sum it up next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
The wait is over.
They're going away, baby.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back.
Russell Wilson was talking about the Seahawks offense. Phil Simms was asking him about their two-minute drill. Russell Wilson said they're really successful in 2 minutes and explained why here.
You know, I really know kind of what I want to, you know, get after them and how we want to get after them, especially in those moments. And guys just make plays in those moments. I think the freedom of just going after and just scoring as many points, you know, that's kind of what the Chiefs do, to be honest with you. They do a really good job. Andy Reid and Mahomes, they do a really good job of getting up to the ball, playing with their playmakers and finding a way to make plays. And, you know, they score more points than everybody else. And I think that's the name of the game is you can score one more point than they do.
Right.
And there's different ways to go about it. Listen, the reality is we've won a lot of football games
you
over
have.
The years.
I know.
But we're holding
a very high standard.
But I think there's also the expectation of being here, not just sitting here in this seat next to you guys, unfortunately.
Yeah, right. Being on the big banner here, the Super Bowl.
But being on the big banner and winning it all.
The reason we mentioned that sound is we had Bill Barnwell on at 2, and he said that he wants to see Russell Wilson get more opportunities to pass. He thinks that Russell Wilson is as good as any of the top quarterbacks in the league, said he's a top 2-3 quarterback, and he'd be curious to see what the Seahawks look like just utilizing him more. And one thing he mentioned was Russell Wilson, he felt, had been advocating essentially for more of those opportunities. And I don't know that I totally agree. You obviously know him a lot better than I do. How do you interpret that clip?
How do I interpret that clip?
Yeah.
I think that he's looking at it saying, okay, he's asked the question about, you know, Chris Simms and NBC Sports. They're sitting there asking him about, you know, why it's so frustrating to watch you have to wait to the second half and then go for it. Right. And he's talking about, you know, 2 minute and up tempo and feeling comfortable in that. And that, you know, in 2 minute, the reality is that he is calling the plays in 2 minute. He did that under Daryl Bevel.
Russell
that's
is?
What he does. That's what he's done his entire career is under 2 minute situations. He's calling plays. He feels comfortable in that. And also, you know, when you reference the Kansas City Chiefs and you look at it and say you admire the way that they play and how aggressive they are at the beginning of games, I think that that says something. I don't think that that's just a washaway statement. And so if Russell Wilson is advocating, you know, to play with more tempo, to play with more aggression to start the game because you're trying to play aggressive and you're not trying to wait till the end to win games, I think that that says something. And so when you hear that And you hear Bill Barnwell come on and say, it seems like Russell's advocating to throw the ball a little bit more and to maybe change some offense. I think you're looking at a guy that also sits there and, as he said to Chris Sims, that the goal is to go to the Super Bowl. I want to win a Super Bowl. I don't want to be sitting here in this chair talking to you guys, essentially. And so trying to find ways to be able to get that done and trying to get better and evolve, I think is something that any franchise quarterback is going to advocate for.
Do you think it's something that could feasibly change under Schottenheimer? Because I know some people, there's a very vocal group of people who are not okay with the Seahawks offense as it stands right now, despite any improvement there. But I would say that they did improve their run-pass play percentage, leaning more into the pass this year, still significantly below a team like Kansas City. But do you think there's reason to believe that that'll continue to lean more on Russell Wilson moving forward?
Yeah, I think it grows. I think, you know, like I said, I've defended Brian Schottenheimer. I think that he's done a good job here with the task that he's been given by Pete Carroll, and I do think that there is a willingness to continue to grow and evolve, and Pete Carroll has a certain philosophy in terms of how he wants to approach it. So I'm not necessarily convinced that it's Brian Schottenheimer who is necessarily the guy that you point to in terms of this offense not opening up yet. I think, you know, between Pete Carroll, Brian Schottenheimer, and Russell Wilson, they have to come together and put something together that everybody feels comfortable with and can allow Russell Wilson to do what he's capable of doing. So I think that's the interesting part moving forward. Yeah. And knowing that you have your quarterback publicly saying, we do need to make some changes. And it's not in the sense that he's being controversial with it, but just pointing to the facts of saying, look, we can be better. I want our group to be better, and I think I can help us be better. I think that's natural for any franchise quarterback in the position that Russell is in. And when you point to that run pass ratio stat, Stacey, I also want to see what those numbers are like, because I also think that the second half and the fourth quarter in particular might skew those numbers in terms of the percentages.
It's true. I would bet that it does. It gets into one of those interesting conversations too. Kyle, you pointed this out earlier, but you were talking about the defensive line, but it's like a chicken. Is it the chicken or egg?
It's a chicken or the egg.
Chicken or the egg situation, where can they lean more on Russell Wilson and put the offense fully in his hands without making improvements to pass protection and without giving him more weapons? And now, after a three-hour show, I'm finally coming around to the idea that maybe offense...
Yes!
Wow, maybe, yes! Well done!
That's what I'm talking about.
Compelling arguments!
That maybe the offense could use a few more investments here. But it really, I think framing it in that sense makes it easier to understand that point of view. Is, yeah, it's hard to look at where they were on defense this year and not think that they need improvements, especially on their pass rush. But if you're also calling for Russell Wilson to be the point and the linchpin of your offense, can you do that with the weapons you have now?
Not just the linchpin of your offense, but your team.
Right.
Right? I mean, he was in the position, like, the reality is that this team was in the position they were because of Russell Wilson's ability to make everyone around him better. And imagine if you give him the type of weapons and the type of protection that, you know, anywhere similar to what Patrick Mahomes was able to have. They've got a great foundation in terms of Chris Carson, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett. But it's not going to just be them and them alone. You have to add more weapons beyond that.
Where does that start?
And I think it starts with the offensive line. And again, this is not saying that you just go all in on the offense and you make no investment in the defense. The defensive line and pass rush has to be addressed, but you have to also, if you're leaning more into this area, you've got to start relying on getting everything around Russell Wilson in terms of protection and playmakers. You have to upgrade in those situations.
Someone said, we saw what it looked like with Josh Gordon. They may not need to add more offense, but it wouldn't hurt at all. You go back to your Sammy Watkins example, I certainly wouldn't mind seeing what this offense looks like with, like, another DK Metcalf out there.
Of course. Of course. I mean, it would be great. I mean, look at it. You know, your wide receiver three, your tight end, you know, being your fourth option and being just as confident as those guys to be able to go and make a play as you are Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf at any given point. I mean, that's the type of offense that you're looking for, and I think that they can get there.
All right, that'll do it for us today. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you missed any of the show, don't forget to go to 710sports.com. Check out our podcast or wherever you listen to your podcasts. We had Mike Salk, Brock Huer, Bill Barnwell. You're going to love it. Thanks for listening. This is Tom, Jake, and Stacey.